Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Thank you, dear listener, for your patience over the past many months. In an effort to get this episode out as ironically quickly as we could, meaning from the time I edited it to publish, my main goal was to get the editing done so we could publish. So this episode does not have mention of Patreon or our co-producers, etc. That will resume the next episode. So thank you for your patience, and thank you to all of our supporters everywhere, whether you're new listener, a longtime listener, a Patreon supporter, or not a Patreon supporter. We appreciate all of your support just by listening to our show. We hope you enjoy this belated episode discussion of 705. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 435 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
We are in love with all things Outlander. And now on to our episode discussion, episode 705, entitled Singapore.
We have a cold open.
It was real cold.
At Lallybroch, Bree finds Jem and Mandy playing, I'm almost right in the garden. I wrote graveyard, but almost read garden, in the graveyard. And she's like, I told you guys you're not supposed to come here. What's going on? Oh, well, Mandy says she wants to come here and talk to Granda. So,
is it weird that I didn't even think about it being weird that the kids were there until Bree made it a big deal?
About the graveyard?
Yeah, because I was just like, no, it's on the property. Who cares? And it wasn't until she was like, absolutely not. I don't want to see your cairn that you made. I don't want to go into the graveyard, that I was like, oh.
She was a little hot-headed. I understand, but she's very protective, but I get it. And let's be honest, even if she had told them not to go there, and even if she's protective, it probably was mostly partially out of that, but also partially out of like having to admit she knows 200 years down the road, her parents are dead and gone by now.
Yeah, they're already dead, but she doesn't want to know.
But she doesn't want to face it because they're still alive. They're still alive in those letters. Right. And she doesn't want to be doing hopping both sides of that fence.
But I thought it was weird that she had that whole experience at the graveyard and then went home, looked at a letter, and then cried.
Yes. After she shoos the kids out, she goes, the next scene basically is Bree at a letter, crying over the letter, and then Roger comes home, or the outside of a letter, and Roger come home, Roger, Carol Ann, that's light.
Come toward the light, Carol Ann.
Roger comes home and says, hey, oh, what's wrong, blah, blah, blah. She tells him, she gives him the rundown, and then he sees it, and she's like, I really miss them, and so they read one together. The date is 6/18/1777 at Fort Ticonderoga.
We are using the same device.
Yes. So it is used again. We have not left it, at least for now.
Correct.
Okay. And then quick, I did not time the scene, but there is a legit scene because we get Claire's VO. We go to, we're with the in the colonies again with Jamie and Claire. And we're with them at Fort Ticonderoga after where they are stationed, or Jamie is stationed. Claire's with him after his conscription. And that's really it. Back at Lallybroch. Back with them, same scene, same exact scene. Bree, he starts reading, or he was reading it, they were reading it, and they had Claire's VO, but they pause it. She pauses it. She says, I don't know, I don't want, oh, sorry, I remember now. Roger goes up to the bookshelf and starts to look for, he's like, look, do you want me to read about the battle? I can get this book or this book. And she's like, no, thank you. I don't want to know. la 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 la.
Exactly. Nope. She's like, no, thank you. She was like, especially that book, not that book.
She said that?
Yeah, she did. She was like, no, don't do not with that book.
Are they tipping?
I don't know. My only point is that she was very specific about the book he pulled out of the bookshelf and then he slid it back in, which made me think that they already knew tipping. That they were very accurate books and they didn't want to, and she didn't want to know the answer. Okay.
To non-readers, you don't know what that was referencing, if it referenced anything, and that's fine. Doesn't bug you, doesn't hurt you, doesn't help you, right? To readers, again, we're not behind the scenes. We can't promise this, but what I mean when I mean tipping, and I'm not going to spoil it, but what readers, what I'm saying is that his wording about that, or not her, excuse me, her wording about not that book, could be because there's a very specific book. There's a reason she does not want to see a very specific book on that bookshelf. And I'll leave it at that. A history book, put it that way. Back in Ticonderoga. Jamie gets his battle planning hat on and they have like this big, like the table with like they're inside somewhere. There's a big like paper map, colored map and color map. And then they're talking about what to do, where, who goes where, blah, 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 blah. Okay, that's it. Scene change.
Are we at Claire? Because 100% we're about to get into a scene where Claire says, I'm a surgeon. And everyone goes, no, you're not.
Wilderness of the Colonies. Hunters and William are riding along north. Oh, I gotta say, William scene. Looks good in blue. I like him
he
in that.
He does, but I honestly hate the inference of the closeness between him and Rachel. I think they're making it bigger than it was in the book.
Well, I don't think they're making it bigger. I think what I think was in the book, even, and this is past, so I can go into detail because it's not spoiling any potential show stuff. Anytime there's any cheating this way or cheating that way with regard to, I know that's a stage term, but I'm trying to like use it. I hope it's correct. Anytime we get a scene like this or a scene with Rachel and Ian, right? Honestly,
I mean, technically, this was Rachel and William.
Okay, not in the books, and I'm not going to go forward because that would be a spoiler. But I'm talking one-on-one. Anytime we get anything with Rachel and William, and anytime we get anything with Rachel and Ian separately, I'm saying this to your point about William. It is not with the things that they, as well as the book, try to put forward or insinuate, there's not a lot of groundwork laid.
Well, it's a lot of extra groundwork laid.
Or what they leave or use as groundwork, to me, is not convincing.
But it's also not book true.
I would disagree because I thought in the book there wasn't enough, not enough, like meaning I needed more, but enough to substantiate some feelings that were supposedly there.
In what I remember from reading the book, it is that there isn't enough to substantiate a reciprocal relationship between Rachel and William. However, in the series, they have made Rachel appear way more welcoming to William in general, to a way that they are implying that there is a closer relationship between them.
You're mean to, because you already kind of hinted at this before in a kind of tongue-in-cheek way. You're hinting at that the way, and I don't think the change is with the dudes. The change is with Rachel.
Right. The dudes are doing the same thing. It's just that they've made Rachel appear.
I would agree. Absolutely. If there's a big difference or a difference that one I would notice between how they're setting up a potential, not relationship, but potential feelings between Rachel and William, and how they're setting up potential feelings between Rachel and Ian, which we haven't got there yet, right? In the show, at least. I mean, we've had scenes.
They make it seem equal, and in the book, it is not.
So I don't think they are making it seem equal. Maybe they mean to make it seem equal. I think what you're seeing is, and this may equal to you, it looks equal, okay? Or this may mean, this what they did, because you've already confirmed that this is what you think, or the person, the character okay. change. Not huge change, like a 180, no. But the addition, the zhuzhing of, the fluffer. They're fluffing Rachel. Rachel has a fluffer. Someone is giving Rachel, yes, it's the way they wrote it. So it's not the actress is great. I like her. She has no, I have no issues with her.
No, I love the casting.
I think I would agree with you that the difference to me is not the intended difference between her and William and her and Rachel, and not the effective, meaning what they intended versus what actually, you know, comes out, or what the viewer should get and then does get as a viewer. I only speak for me. To me, it's not that it's different from the book as far as the received info, the received level, whatever. Mm-hmm. To me, I agree with you in that the difference there, and it's very, it's quite different. It's quite, not like so big that it's bad. It's not bad. It's just, like I said, it's a zhuzhing up. It's a much more, Rachel's always frank. Not quite forward, but very, she did speak her mind. Rachel of the show, either through writing or through the acting or a combo of both, is more, I wouldn't even call her a flirt necessarily. I mean, she might be a flirt for a Quaker, but she's definitely, she gives more than Rachel of the book.
I'm just saying they're making her more open to relationships on all sides in a way that is not book specific or book.
True of the book.
It's just not, it's just other.
It's a difference. And it definitely, it's a difference that's big enough, not big or bad or either, but it's different enough that you notice it.
I'm just saying that when reading the books, it was not that much of a surprise when Rachel made a choice. But the way the show is going now, it's feeling like they're making it a bigger choice.
So after they're going along the road, they meet the dangerous oddball. I was going to use a different word, but I was like, no, I'll just let him show himself. It's a person who lives, whose farm is right about there. And he's like, hey, y'all, you're going the wrong way to get to XYZ. But stay with me for a night.
This whole moment and this whole sequence of scenes was absolutely more horrific than the book. 100%
How
more
do you
horrific.
Say that? That's so funny because I thought the book was absolutely worse.
No.
Just like Fireship.
I'll tell you why. Because they served dinner to everyone with whole rat bodies with fur in the stew.
Okay.
Whereas I don't recall them being whole ass bodies in the stew.
It was never described. It was left to our imagination.
So what I'm saying is they made the stew so much more horrific than it was in the book. Like in the books, they implied that it was just out of date or expired stew.
They implied it was made up of stuff you don't want to know about.
Right. But they also implied that it was not.
Yeah, and it might also be edible. Had gone off. Yeah.
And it had been off and they were just feeding people things. But what they actually put in these bowls was furry rat bodies.
Well, I think they did a good job.
And
I mean, they made it. It was supposed to be gross and they did it. And the guy gets them by saying, you know, my farm, I used to thrive. And then my home sack.
Tell me more about your sack, Ginger.
My homestead
was ransacked.
Are you a Santa sack
or a ball sack?
My homestead was ransacked by both armies. So he's like an equal opportunity hater. That's fair. That's the only fairness.
He's just like, I hate everyone. And I'm going to invite everyone to stay with us because I've crossed the road off of their options of egress.
And also, you want to know what this soup is? It's soup of furry mice. With the side of homestead.
Those were not mice. Those were not the size of mice. Those were
That's
rats.
True. So he convinces them to like come stay the night and they have a slumber party.
But to be fair, they didn't feel like they had an option.
That's true.
Because there was nowhere to go.
So they go to his house and his wife offers soup. I was a little, we're not going to say it. Well, it's not a spoiler. I'll save this right now. Was it a little bit much? Absolutely. But was it freaking disgusting and very entertaining? Absolutely. I'm not going to lie. I was a little bit disappointed that the wife did not have was not a mute, or she could grunt, but she had a voice. But I was a little disappointed she didn't have a split tongue.
I completely forgot that was a thing. So I'm okay with the fact that she didn't have a split tongue.
After they have gross soup, Rachel's like, gotta go. Sorry. This ain't for me. I think someone's calling me outside.
For real, real. All I want to say about this is that this scene in the books was gross.
Of course it was.
It was not pleasant. But the TV series made it worse. It was worse.
So then she goes outside. She's like, I don't think I'm hungry, actually. And not right away, but soon thereafter, William walks out after her. And they start chatting with each other.
And then, for real, though, the whole point was him saying, I didn't even look at it. I didn't look at it because I didn't want to figure out what it was. And I was like, you had to look at it. You had to know, because how do you use a fork?
Here's the thing. You don't have to look at it. You can close your eyeballs and put into your soup. But as soon as your fork or your spoon, I think it was a spoon. As soon as your spoon hits something hard and you try and pick it up in your spoon, it's so big that it's going over both sides of your spoon, and you try to put it in your mouth and you get a mouthful of fur and the thing is bigger than your mouth hole. I think
they
you're
had
gonna
to look. They had to know. Exactly. So not acknowledging what they put in their mouths is a lie, because there was absolutely no way they could pretend that those furried carcasses were not rats.
From home sack to no knickers, we go to Lallybroch. Roger and Bree have a no knickers conversation in the kitchen. That's pretty much from the book. And Bree's like, gotta go to work. It's my first day. And she starts, they show her driving in and walking. She walks on with her boss, I think, over the dam and looks around. And then she has to go actually meet her direct reports. She walks up and they have a nice little welcome party for her.
She was so wholly unprepared.
Just a tiny bit.
I'm just saying that because in the past when she was doing she had Jamie to back her up.
Yes.
Whereas when she's in the 1960s, even Roger's not going to back her up. He's kind of a puss.
And so Rob Cameron introduces himself. And this is, I think, the first look the viewer gets about a dude named Rob Cameron. And then after they give her her keys. They're like, you need to drive off to this site or go to an inspection or whatever. And so they all drive over to this place that she's going to either get an inspection of or look at, whatever. And now they've taken her keys. Well, in the book, they take her keys to do something. I don't know if they took her keys to do the same thing here, but they definitely took her keys to. She doesn't have her keys with her when she goes in. So
it spoke to me in a way that these tunnels were locked from the outside. So it wouldn't have mattered if she had
I see what you're saying. Okay. So she's like, okay, well, let's go. And of course, they I don't know if they did this or not, but however it happened, she was the first one in and the last one in. And they lock the door or close the door and see ya, boss. We'll see you at the other side or whatever. And so I was like, the first time I watched this was 3 weeks ago. And I was like, yay, obviously they have to. They kind of have to keep some version of the tunnel, right? And before I give my opinion, what did you think about the hazing, the adaptation?
The hazing in and of itself read true to the books for me. Her experience in the tunnels did not.
Okay. I agree. I thought it was pretty darn faithful with regard to how it started.
Right.
But her getting out of it. Okay. I'll just say legit what it was. So she goes in. It's dark, right? She has a match that doesn't really work. Or she has I don't care if she has matches, because if she had gone through the whole thing with matches that she had to keep relighting, that would have been a fine substitution for not having the little train. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least she's still trying to get out. Maybe there was a reason, either because of the play, they couldn't maybe they could literally only film there. They could turn the lights on or off, light two matches, whatever.
Well,
but maybe they literally had to get permission and they could not do anything
there. You can't film full dark and you need to have some light. They're never going to have moonlight underground.
No, that's true. But it doesn't matter. You can fake it. You can fake it.
You can, but they decided to make it.
Yes. And
an actual reason where light would be available to see the actress.
Yes, of course.
By making it an internal.
But all she did, and okay, and I'm not, again, this is not about the actress. And it's not even necessarily about the writer. Well, it could be about the writers if the writers did this from the get-go. If they had to massage the how once they actually got to set, right, and could and knew where they were able to work and what they could or couldn't do. And of course, yes, of course, light's an issue. Lighting's an issue. I'm not saying it's not an issue. But if a tunnel is lit, all you're doing is literally following the tunnel. There's no
correct.
There's no
but
fear.
There were several tunnels underneath that she could have followed, and she made choices based upon her remembrance of the tunnel map.
That I'm not saying that that's bad. I'm saying comparing it to the book, and I'm not saying the book is better or should. And it's an adaptation, so absolutely they can make a different choice, or they can make an adaptation, an adaptive choice. That is due to the needs of the location. So, right. So I get it. There have been so many changes, like we've talked about a lot of them. So I'm not dogging what they did. I'm just saying, yes, I understand that she, you know, looked at she did her homework, as she tells the kids later. She memorized or remembered the layout of the tunnels. Yes. And that's good. This is a good example of that, because that part is straight from the book.
Honestly, none of that bothered me.
It is not that it bothered me. I thought it was because even saying that, I don't care if you have lights. Well, obviously it's worse without lights, obviously. But if you're locked in a tunnel and you don't know what way is out and you make wrong, like it doesn't matter that she got out quickly or not. I mean, it's better that she did. We don't know how long, relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what she had to go through. I mean, it does, but you know what I'm trying to say. The whole point is that the dickwads did this to her.
But I don't even care about that.
Okay.
What I care about is the fact that the sound was visible.
Oh, the sound was invisible. The place between was, the between space was visible.
Right.
The sound
was
from there. But
it is never visible anywhere else, and it was not,
I know,
pitch dark underground. So by that definition, they should have been able to see the buzzing of the buzzing of the stones on Craig Nadu.
That's one of the reasons
they should
have kept it dark or mostly dark, because they wouldn't have had this.
I know,
but I agree.
But the thing is they shouldn't have been able to see it dark or otherwise.
I agree.
It should just be a sound.
I agree.
That is a deterrent.
I agree.
According to the books. So her being able to see didn't bother me. Her ability to be able to see the sound and the space between did bother me.
I agree with that. I agree. So, okay. So this is book related, but not spoilery, related to this episode and this event, the hazing event.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Later on, it's interesting. So now that we have no train, so the lights were off, right? She had to light a match to see. She went over, she used her memory of the layout schematic to choose which way to go. But she would have had a much harder time if it weren't light. The way she got the light was she lit a match and went over to the side where the controls were.
She lit a match and then turned them on.
If,
right, and that's
but
not
she knew where she knew to do that. So the thing I'm going to allude to, but not give a lot of, you know, I'm not going to give spoilers. But so basically, however we feel, I feel, you feel, anybody feels about them, if you're a book reader, I mean, about them not using a train or not having the dark or whatever, right? Regardless of how we feel about how they adapted it,
mm-hmm.
In the end, unless we get some magic show, which I hope we don't, in the end, when the thing I'm referring to now happens, it won't matter, because it could be just as dangerous as it could have been for Bree if she hadn't turned the lights on, right?
Right.
So we'll be fine. So I hope we'll be fine.
I don't even know yet, but go ahead.
This is what you already said. So, I wrote this down. what I wrote seems to be against what you said, but it's, but I agree with you. Okay. I wrote, I liked the way they showed the between space. I don't mean I like the fact that they showed it. I'm saying I liked like the iridescent shimmery thing. It was pretty to me. It was like, oh, squirrel. That's all I mean.
No, it was pretty, but it was not.
It was inconsistent.
True to story.
Which is called inconsistent.
Yes,
absolutely. And then besides the lights, which is a whole, we had a discussion about that already. I thought maybe because there's no stones, right? Because there's no marker, maybe the show, it's still inconsistent, 100%. But maybe, whereas in the book, it's dark and you can experience like her feelings as she goes through it, right? She like, she gets nauseous and this and this and this, and she goes through it and she like passes out for a moment or something like that. You can get all of that in the book because you're getting her thoughts and feelings and.
But that could have absolutely been the case of the series, because to date, all interactions with stones and places of passage have been audible. All you had to do was continue to make it audible.
I agree.
We didn't need the shimmer because that felt really out of place.
I agree with that. But I'm thinking because they chose to use lights, or actually maybe I'm thinking backwards. Maybe they chose to use lights because they were afraid if it was dark and we heard a sound and then her reaction to it, because if we couldn't see much, meaning her, not the shimmer, then maybe the viewers wouldn't understand.
Then they should have made the sound have a shimmer the whole time.
I agree.
You can't introduce a shimmer in season 7.
Okay, Ticonderoga. Young Ian is a scout. He's asked to go to a Native American village where there's a Tiondenega. Tiondenega. Where he knows Emily lives.
Yeah, he's familiar. He's familiar.
Yes, I think it's Snake Town, but I could be wrong. No, Snake Town was where the Mohawks were in like book 4. So I think it's wrong. Book 4 or 5.
I think it was Shadow something.
I forgot what I wrote. And though he's like, okay, gotta go there. So what does he do? Does he like pack up and go? Absolutely not. He goes to Claire.
No, he goes straight to Claire to ask about the worm.
What's wrong with me that my barons die?
Tell me more about my semen.
Why would you look at my semen? So why is he having these thoughts now? Like, obviously, he's just reminded of Emily because of where he's being asked to go.
Well, he knows he's going to see her.
Yes, but it's not just Emily.
And if he sees her... No, it's not just Emily, but he's only concerned about Emily.
No, I disagree. If it were just Emily, then, I mean, he has every right to be concerned about his body. I'm not talking about that. But he specifically asks a question. He asks about what's wrong with him that his barons died. He says, I think the reason he's having these thoughts now, well, the reason is because he's now thinking of Emily. So, yes.
He doesn't know he has a live baron.
What? I'm not talking about it. I don't care about that. I'm not talking about any kid.
I'm just saying he's asking questions based upon his knowledge at the time, wherein every child he's tried to have.
But
has
I don't think he's only asking about the children he's had.
Well, no, he's concerned about this continuing as a pattern.
Now you hit that. Now you got there. It's not about the past, although that's general. That's valid enough to be concerned about and want answers for. That's valid. But that's not his concern. His concern is that if there's something wrong with him, he says he could never, ever take another wife if he knew he couldn't have bairns with her. So that's what he's thinking about. So it's Emily, I think, zhuzhes the or makes the thought or makes him have this conversation now. But he's not doing it. Like, he doesn't need to do it now. He's not about to try and go knock up Emily again. Right? He is thinking about another hussy. Another lady, maybe.
That's not wrong.
That's all.
It's not wrong. He's had a life-changing experience with a new cast member, just like other people have.
I mean, not quite yet. They haven't done anything.
No, but they had a very significant meet cute.
Oh, over the horse's nose, yes.
And she took his dog.
No, Ian, your auntie will not look at your spunk. Blech. Back on the road. William wakes up. Remember, William and the hunters are staying the night at the slumber party. William wakes up with gurgling guts.
And that's what saves his goddamn life.
They don't fight right away like they do in the book, but they fight, blah 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 blah. The guy like gets smashed with ashes and blah, 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 like that's pretty close to the book, I think. But what's different, I think, yeah, I am, I'm sure, is that I wrote, and damn the way he punches the woman in the face. I literally like went, oh. I didn't realize I had forgotten he'd punched the wife. Oh, that was funny.
Someone had to.
And this is fine. Like I get it. But you and I talked about this not so much in the show discussions, but definitely in the book. Oh my gosh, all over the place. Rachel says to him, "You saved our lives. I don't know how to thank thee." And then she didn't say this, but according to Quakers, and yet still it was wrong. So I am not judging Quakers for having morals. I am not judging Quakers or anyone for saying
no, but these particular Quakers understand that if he hadn't stepped outside of the line of what's acceptable in their society, they would all be dead.
You can understand. That's not a thing. I mean, yes, they understand that if he hadn't done what he did, they could be dead, or one of them or both of them. I'm not discounting that.
Right, but they wouldn't be thanking him for his actions.
Yes, and I already quoted that. What I'm saying is my issue from the book. It hasn't really been so strong yet in the show conversations. And so thus maybe it doesn't really pertain to the show. But one of the things we talked about, or I mentioned several times in the book, is like I can understand appreciation for like thank you for saving our lives, but even after something like that in the book, Rachel, there are at least one other thing where someone has to be killed to save Rachel, right? And maybe someone else. And she's still upset that death has to come.
That's fair, but I still feel like her relationships with these
non-Quaker dudes
or friends is expanding her belief system and what is acceptable, because I believe that Rachel is shifting.
I don't know that she is shifting. Okay, I'll put it this way. If Rachel shifts, they've changed the character. Because in the book,
she does not shift.
You can be against murder or injury or whatever, right? You could be against that.
No, but she begins to recognize the necessity of it.
I would disagree.
Which places her in a different space than every other Quaker.
We don't have much of her. We only have this one scene as far as the death thing or hurting or fighting is concerned yet. There's much more in the book, obviously, because the book is bigger. She has limitless space. Even as far or as recent as book 9, she absolutely has not changed. So that was part of my issue, not my issue with Rachel, but it's...
She still doesn't want people to be killed.
Yes.
But she recognizes the fact that people who are not on the up and up require a comeuppance.
She's not against jail, put it that way. She's not against prison, but she is against torture, killing, injuring, that kind of thing. Anyway, so... Ticonderoga. Jamie learns that his cousin, Brigadier General Simon Fraser, is fighting for the Brits on the other side.
Right. He's like, shut the fuck up, you guys. He's a Highlander, which means whatever expectations you have of him as an Englishman or a Frenchman are incorrect.
And Claire inadvertently provides some kind of tactical advice to Jamie. She tells him about something about World War II, the Japanese, something, something. And he's like, hold that thought, and walks away. That's the scene.
That's the title of the whole episode.
Well, Singapore, so yeah. So on the road, scene change, the hunters and the Willies bid adieu to each other. William says to the hunters, should any Brits molest you, demand to see their officer and say that you know the name of his friend, the officer's name, Harold Gray.
Just name someone who has no idea who you are, who is going to say, I don't know who these people are when he shows up.
And they're like, who's that, William? And he said, exactly. That's my kin. And then William pays them off or gives them money. The hunters. Denzel offers Rachel to find a safe place for her so that she doesn't have to be around the war. And she's like, nah, I'm with you. Shut up.
Who are you, buddy?
You're stuck with me.
That sounds boring.
Back with Scout Young Ian. Young Ian finds Kim, and Kim tells him, we have a child, you have a son. And yes, it was very planned.
No, we are not Miss Saigoning a thing that is not a Miss Saigon reference. You are forcing a Miss Saigon reference. Yes, you are. Her name is not Kim.
Oh, does not matter. It's going with it. It doesn't matter.
It matters. It matters because other people who listen to this do not have all of the same.
Of course not. That's why that's why we explain them. So Ian goes and spreads pie all over himself, saying,
Ian makes inferences on his own. She is not a Kim.
You are being way too literal. Ian spreads pie.
Ginger, I'm being as literal as is required for the situation we're just speaking of.
Ian spreads pie all over himself, saying, quote, sorry, I couldn't give you children. And then we get to meet his son, whitest of Mohawks. I mean, swiftest of lizards. And then in a switcheroo, Emily asks him to choose an English name for him. And he chooses to name the boy Bob. I mean, Ian James. Now we're at Lallybroch with the fam. Or half the fam. Jem comes home from school. Something's happened. So he's kind of mopey, but not like pissy, a little sad, kind of in the middle somewhere. And I first thought he was going off to like the woods or, you know, to find his grandpa's
or back to the graveyard
cave. But he heads to, I don't know, was that supposed to be the Ducat or the Brock? I'm guessing the Brock because they found those papers.
It looked like a Ducat.
That's what I mean. And the inside, it looked like a Ducat.
The interior was a Ducat.
So we find out, basically, I'm not going to rehash the whole thing. I know that's a surprise to some of you. Jem got in trouble for using Gaelic in class. That's the gist of it. And Roger says, absolutely not. It is not bad. Gaelic is not bad. It is not bad to speak Gaelic. And as the scene ends, as they're walking out or whatever, Roger says something like, you guys should be like cleaning up after yourself. And Jem's like, that's not our rubbish. And Mudger's like, huh? So that like a little bit of seed planting or little crumbs dropped here and there about someone who's.
But also screw the littering Nuklevi.
Back at Ticonderoga, Dr. Claire is with a patient, I'm guessing, a raving Mrs. Raven. And then Claire meets Denzel Hunter. And then Claire confirms when she's working or speaking with the patient, she confirms that Mercy Woodcock's husband needs to lose his foot/leg. I guess lower leg.
Why don't we just say Walter?
Walter?
His name is okay. Walter.
Mr. Woodcock. Claire wins the surgery game. She gets to do it.
Does she? Are you saying that she wins between herself and the
Claire's way of doing things?
White dude who doesn't believe
Claire's way of doing things wins.
Right, but it doesn't because she's on board with Denzel's decisions.
Yes, and she and Denzel are the ones who do the surgery, so they win. And I'll reference that in just a second because I thought it was hecka, not funny, but hecka like, wow. Jamie provokes an attack from the Brits, silly goose. And he shows that the fort is indeed within firing range of the Brits. The executive, and I know it's not an actual rank.
Worst Frenchman ever?
Yes.
That was the worst accent.
I don't know the word accent, but he was definitely effective in the way he bugged. And that general, whoever he was, he wasn't great.
His accent felt real thick in ways that is not super, a natural
super,
accent.
Like super dramatic, as in someone's trying really hard.
Yes, and they're so much closer to France than we are here in America. Surely they should have been able to find
I see. I thought you meant like the East Coast of America. I'm like, Summer, don't be stupid. You mean Scotland. No, okay. No. Come yes. on, North Carolina is a lot, or wherever they are, Ticonderoga is a lot closer to France. What, then California?
No, that's not what I meant.
Good Lord.
Not even a little bit.
Ian
no,
returns, strutting with his healthy semen.
With his, and his memories of his very visibly white child.
Yes. As I said, his faux name was Whitest of Mohawks. Confident with his in his healthy semen, chats up Rachel.
But I love the idea that her new husband is just like, cool, that's totally my kid.
I'm sure her husband knows. He's accepting the baby as his own, obviously. Like, he didn't shun him.
I mean, I'm sure it was less known until they actually had a child of their own between the two of them. And they were like, oh, no, when we make babies, they look like these. They're a little darker.
Young Ian offers to protect Rachel. But she's like, I don't know why. We're like, look where we're at, dude. We're in a military camp. I don't think I need your protection. But she makes eyes. She makes eyes. And she finds out Claire is his auntie. After the fastest and most pain-free amputation ever, Claire is chumming it up chatty-wise with Woodcock.
Are you saying that because they didn't show it?
No, because it's like next scene and he's like sitting up in apparently no pain because he's not on laudanum or else he'd be knocked out or laying down or sleeping.
Look, I imagine there was a time passage.
Yes, and we got none
of
it.
Show
That's
it
true.
To us.
That's true. I don't know exactly when. Oh, who knows when.
I feel confident that it took as long as any normal amputation.
I'm not talking about the length of surgery. I'm talking about the length of recovery and healing as opposed to whom we're seeing. Now, she does,
right,
to be
not,
fair.
You're not wrong. But the point is we don't have a definition of the time that has passed.
And that's another thing that the show does. Well, probably the worst thing the show does is not give us the. It's.
Well, but what if their intention is to show us the time has passed because he's recovering?
That's true. That's true. But it's very. It is jaunting. Jaunting? Jarring. It's jarring.
It doesn't have to be. If we accept the fact that they show passages of time by people having longer hair like Claire or having bangs like Brianna. So I believe that his recovery was used as a time passage.
Possibly. I'm not saying it wasn't. I'm saying this is one sequence that we have not left. We start at Fort Ticonderoga with Mrs. Raven raving.
Right.
Claire meets the hunters. She goes to war, so to say, over the surgery game, trying to do it a certain way. And then Jamie gets attacked from the Brits, or he has them shoot the camp. Ian comes back, has a whole little chit chat with Rachel, and then we go straight back to the surgeon's tent. I'm just telling you, if we had left and gone somewhere and then come back, it would be a lot more believable. It was literally the same sequence, and there was no other than the fact that Ian comes back. And obviously, it's going to be a few weeks gone and a few weeks to get back. So, obviously. But we don't know when Raven started raving as opposed to when Ian left. Seems a lot longer because Ian was two scenes ago. And a whole time frame ago.
He was two scenes ago, but he had to travel much farther north than Ticonderoga, which also allows for a passage of time.
That's the only thing that allows for passage of time.
It's another Claire's hair is longer passage of time scene.
I also thought it was interesting. So Claire's chummy chatted up with Woodcock and it's entertaining. It's like, oh, he's all hopeful. Oh, bless him. He's hoping to make up with his wife. They had apparently some kind of like disagreement or they didn't leave on the best. He did not leave on the best circumstances. Back to Lallybroch. B, 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 C, D, E, F, G. Bree makes a fascinating tale out of her hazing. In private with Roger, she's all, JK, it was
like, for real, like, even pretending for the kids was weird.
Made me laugh.
It was performative in a way that it didn't need to be performative.
I mean, she even like clapped for herself. Like,
I know. I feel like she could have approached her family and been like, I didn't have a great day. I believe tomorrow is going to be better. Because
exactly.
Now
use
I know
it as a teaching moment.
Do.
You don't have to go into details. Just say,
right.
You know, sometimes we don't have the best days. And we can say, like your brother, Jem, he didn't have the best day either.
And to be honest, she had a way better day than Rob Cameron. So if
Not
she's
yet.
Measuring
How are you
all those
about?
Things, I'm saying she did because everyone expected her to just melt down in the tunnel and cry.
Mm.
And instead, she got out of it.
Yeah,
on her own with little to no trouble.
Yes.
Which they did not expect her to be able to have accomplished. So she's still having a great day because she's like shown all these men who are less than that they are less than. And they know it now, even though they may not, they still may not respect her. They have to know that they couldn't have done that themselves.
So to make her feel a little bit better, Roger shows her something that he's found. It's a hidden drawer in the desk. But instead of allowing that, which, okay, I get that's not necessary. That's not a gift. That's just neat. Look what I found. But that's not the point. No. The point is the pen. That's the gift. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad gift. It's not about the pen. It's about the fact that production completely passed by the hidden drawer in the desk. But at least they had it.
They showed it. They just didn't show what was in it originally.
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously nothing.
So the question is, will Roger pull it out at some point and be like, oh, look what I found in that drawer before I put a pen in it?
It shouldn't be Roger.
It should if he's the one who discovered it. That's what I'm saying. The way that the show is running right now, anything that was in the drawer before Brianna was made to acknowledge it, he should be the one who knows what it was.
What I'm saying is, in the book at least, who knows what the show will do. In the book, there was nothing in the drawer. It was the fact that there was a drawer that was the big surprise. Okay, Ticonderoga, baby! The angry French general whose summer loves is pissy pants. Because no one listened to Jamie.
Huh. I want everyone
Jamie
to know
tried to
I,
help.
I don't love him.
I know. Okay. He's annoying as poo. And the person who's actually in charge is like, hey, yo, we got to actually evacuate. And the French guy is like, no, or no. Okay. No. That's really bad French, too. Oui, no. That's better. No. Whatever. Lally Rock. Roger wants a quickie before work, but Bree's like, I got to get to work. Nope. No can do, baby. And I think it's later that night because the timing was really odd. So she goes to another day of work, I'm guessing. Or before she, I don't even know, whatever. She's like, I got to go somewhere real quick. She goes up to a local pub and she sits next to Rob Cameron et al. And she jokes.
I kind of thought to myself, one, she either didn't go to work that day or she went to work and worked in her office.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Didn't engage with the dudes. But it was certainly a weird move to have her go from her house to a bar.
That's true. I agree. That's why I'm like, because I don't know. It's a little confusing. But she goes, she saddles up, sits next to Rob Cameron, and she makes jokes like, hey, y'all, yeah. And she does. She's successful. Well, one guy sort of gets up and leaves or walks away anyway. But in general, she is successful about taking the edge off of everything. And then in a low voice, she turns to Rob and says, okay, we can start with a clean slate. But anything like that happens again, you'll all be fired.
All of you for being a dick.
Ticonderoga. Jamie and Claire begin to prep the people, especially the sick and wounded, for evacuation. And
why are you pretending to be French?
I have no idea. It's late. And as Mr. Woodcock sees it, he's like, oh, here, help me out with that. And she's like, I'm so sorry. And this, I did feel bad, actually. He's like trying to like scoot up with his one leg, like, hey, you know, help me get up here. And I can. She's like, I'm so sorry, Mr. Woodcock. And she had like tears. Sheen tears. She had watery eyes. She was like, I'm so sorry. It's just, it ain't going to work. I'm going to leave some laudanum with you to help with pain. Don't drink too much because she didn't say it can be fatal, but you know, don't overdo
it. I also feel like she told him that to let him know that if he needed to guzzle the whole bottle.
Clever. I did not think about that. And then that's it. And the very last scene is we're at Lallybroch and Bree goes to the place that she told her kids to stay out of in general. She goes to the graveyard to put a stone on the little cairn and has a chat with her da.
And that was episode 705. Join us next time when we will be discussing episode 705.
7:06.
I was going to say 7:10. Don't even ask me.
I thought I was going to say 3:07. 7:06, entitled "Where the Waters Meet." If you aren't just getting if you just aren't getting enough interaction and moments to contribute to Outlander conversations, please join us on our Facebook group at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you have a hankering for some Outlander Pod branded merch, please visit our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
If you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, the Outlander Pod Gazette, please do. Find us at outlanderpod.com/newsletter. And thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlanderPod.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.